Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead. We had some trouble turning the microphones on there.
Yeah, it's another case of there's a whole series of switches in here. They have to be turned on and readjusted, and all we have to do is mess up on one of them, and nothing works. So you are listening to...
Start at the beginning.
Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. See, we got it right, finally.
We can say our names.
Yeah, but we practice at it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, most people don't have to practice. They just know how to say their names.
Don't say it in unison with somebody else.
It's true. It's generally not something that you hear on the street on a day-to-day basis.
That's
people
right.
People walking up and saying their names in unison.
I've never heard it on the street, actually. Now, if you had a radio and you were on the street, you could hear it. But,
yeah,
we've always been in here when we've said it, so we need to go out on the street and say it.
And we generally don't listen to reruns of ourselves because the reason why... reason why rerun 10 times fast. Anyway, we're out of town generally when there's a rerun.
In other words, they're so boring that if we do a rerun, we get out of town. Now, the rerun's the reason we leave town, or do we leave town for? And that's the reason of the rerun. Now, you could really make an argument one way or the other. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach, not by coincidence, purely by non-coincidence, is also an SEC-registered investment advisory firm, located in Salado, Texas, and Jake and I, and this is Jeff, are the advising principals at that particular firm. And we're supposed to let you know that because there's obviously a bit of a conflict that we could just go through saying we're the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you want to call in here and ask us some questions or make some comments about the economy or the markets or things of that ilk, you're certainly welcome to do so. The telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
So, what's new?
Let's see. Today began as a Saturday. That is
in some places.
In some places, yes. Yeah. What else
but
is
But that's
new?
Not universal.
No, it's not. You can cross a date line and there's something you're not supposed to cross. I guess dating lines is a bad one.
Well, you know, you're talking about drawing a line in the sand. Some commission somewhere in some organization drew a line in the water, and we pay a lot of attention to it. And if you think about the very concept of having a line that does not touch land at any point that runs from the North Pole to the South Pole in the Pacific, and it zigzags around so as to avoid touching land. And we have arbitrarily said that over there, on the other side of that from here is tomorrow.
Yes.
And I think then, by that definition, that entire area on the other side of the dateline should be called Tomorrowland.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's, of course, that's why the Australian economy and the Chinese economy and even the Japanese economy have done relatively well over the years, is they start right off a day ahead of us. And we have been trying to catch up with them ever since. It's already tomorrow. For those of you who don't understand what we're talking about, it is already, is it tomorrow yet? No, it's just late today, I think, in Japan. But about, you know, I don't know, something like 8 hours, 10 hours before, and I don't even know how many direct hours it is, before it turns tomorrow here, it'll be tomorrow there.
I think I explained this, that this is how I knew that the Mayans were wrong.
Right.
Because December 21st of last year, I just checked the news for Australia, and we were fine on the 22nd. So
obviously,
I knew we weren't going to finish the day poorly.
I think that makes perfectly good sense, actually. My experience, I used to have a client in Australia, and... the thing about the Australians that's so odd to me is you would think they would be more forthcoming, because since she's already in tomorrow, it would seem to me that she should be able to tell me what the market's going to do. And she always claimed she didn't know, even though it was already the day after. I mean, you know, if I'm on a Thursday over here, And she's in Friday already. At the beginning of the day, she should to be able to, you know, I should be able to call her at the beginning of the day. She's already in Friday and tell me what the market close was on Thursday. And she would never tell me. She would claim she didn't know. And I just think that's tremendously unfair. But it explains why the Australian economy has done so well over the years.
Maybe.
It's insider trading. They know what the market is going to do before it does.
All they have to do is get the newspaper and look and see what the lottery winnings were from yesterday and call America and have them get their lottery tickets. I mean,
I wonder why they haven't done that.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like a brilliant scheme, if you ask me.
Well, yeah. Seems like it. Of course, that might explain why their economy has done well and why... You know, I've often wondered about something, and that's going on a little bit again today, or this week. The Japanese yen is considered to be a safe haven. So whenever there's economic stress in the world, there is a tendency for the Japanese yen to rise against the dollar because people are pouring money, they're buying Japanese yen as a safe haven. Now, you would think, okay, well, that means the Japanese must be low on debt and their economy is in good shape.
They're in a lot worse shape than we are.
They've been in a severe recession that looks a lot like a depression for 10 years, over 10
More
years.
More than that. It's been since the 90s we're talking about. So we're talking about 20-plus years.
Their debt-to-GDP ratio, their national debt, their debt of their government, is now, they broke a new record, by the way, this week, and then one of the things I want to talk about.
Wow.
Not only is it over 200% of their gross domestic product, and by the way, folks, this is not things that the government can control as it is in our society. When we talk about our debt in the United States, our national debt, the government's debt, we include Social Security and Medicare. That's the biggest elements in the debt. They don't have that over there.
Nope, they don't need to.
So, they
don't do that in Germany or in France or most of the Europeans either.
In Germany, they do.
Oh, not in France.
They don't?
I need to check on that. Because
no, they don't in China, but I think France and Germany have it. Anyway, so they have a debt equal to 200% of the amount of money that's earned in their economy every year. Now, that debt, by the way, is... government debt, that doesn't count any individual debt and so on. They have very, very low individual debt. Yet it's considered to be a safe haven for money. And of course, there is a plus in that all of their debt is on the books at 0%, which never ceases to amaze me. Apparently, the Japanese people are perfectly willing to loan the government their own money at 0%. You know, and I was trying to figure, why would that be a safe haven? And I've heard some official prognostications on that, which are that the Japanese people, once they loan money to the government, they just leave it there. They don't ever take it. They don't ever call. They don't ever sell their bonds.
Pretty nice of them, actually.
Which is pretty interesting. It's kind of the reverse of the people of the United States.
Well,
they are net credit. The people of Japan not only do not have a net debt. The individuals in Japan. Now, I'm not talking about the government.
597-1400. I do have something that I wanted to bring up.
You do?
I'm
sorry.
Yes?
I forgot the number. The official Japanese debt is now just over one quadrillion yen. That's the first time.
That's a big number.
That is the first time any entity on the planet has ever owed a quadrillion of anything to anyone.
Well, I don't know when the Mexican debt was pretty weird at some point when everybody was a millionaire and you could have $1 million bills in your pocket.
Peso
bills, yes, million peso bills in your pocket.
But their debt, quadrillion is such an absolutely astonishingly large number, even when you consider that it's a... The yen is roughly 100 to the dollar, so it's pennies. But still, quadrillion is just an absolutely mind-boggling big number.
Yes.
I don't even completely understand what a quadrillion is. And I've got trillion, but apparently a 1,000 trillion would be a something.
A lot. I think that's 1,000 trillion is a quadrillion. Yes.
Why would they call it quadrillion instead of something? I guess that's just what they
trillion,
call it.
Trillion. The tri is three.
Mm-hmm.
Billion is bi. That's two.
Oh, okay. So
the quad is
so
four.
They now owe 1,000
trillion.
Trillion.
Yes.
Yen. And even when you divide that by 100, it is still a number that is so big.
We can't make any sense of it. There's no way we can look at that and say it makes any sense at all. Now, I have had several requests for this, the most recent being yesterday. People are looking for better paying interest at banks. And so they're coming up with all these schemes to get better paying interest at banks. I've had a lot of questions about index tracking CDs. Now, are you familiar with these creatures, these monstrous beings?
They apparently track indexes.
Yes.
But the thing is, they never quite, if they're just tracking, they don't catch them.
A lot of these are insured by the FDIC, but there are some dangers there. And let me give some background on this so I'm not just talking about specifics without people knowing what I'm talking about. There's been a lot of advertisements lately about these CDs that are the principals guaranteed by the FDIC. If you just wait till it matures, you get your money back, and you link it to any number of different indexes, anything from one index to 12 or 14 indexes kind of combined somewhere, and you've got all kinds of complexities and participation rates and all that good stuff. But what it comes back to is that your principal's guaranteed, and then if the market does well, whatever index does well during that period, you get a percentage of the return of the market, depending on your participation rate. And so it sounds great.
Do you realize what you just said? You get a percentage of the return of the market according to your participation
yeah.
rate. You could be the next chairman of the Federal Reserve.
I can
Reserve.
Just speak with a monotone when
yes,
I'm doing
yes.
this. So just from the beginning here, you can kind of start to understand that there's some complexity that's a little bit more difficult to understand than your average CD.
According to your participation rate.
Yes, and people say, well, what's participation rate? Well, that's the amount of the principal of the CD that is invested in the option on the market. Well, let me explain some of the risks. While many of these are FDIC insured, and my volume is going up and down in my ears. Are you turning knobs over there?
Well, yeah, we were kind of blowing things off the track here. So.
Okay. While many of these are FDIC insured, one of the dangers involved here is that if you liquidate before maturity, it is likely that you will lose principal. Not just maybe you'll lose principal. Mm-hmm. It is likely because part of your principal was if you're going to take money and put it in a bank in something that you want insured that you may need as cash at some point, do not use one of these.
Well, also because you and I are both principals in our business.
Right.
And we could losing principal is bad. I mean, that's just it's one of those things that we want to try to avoid at all costs.
Yes, we don't want to lose ourselves.
Right.
We'll be self-searching
right.
all the rest of the week.
Anyway, we have a caller on 1-866-597-1400. And by the way, thank you very much for clearing up that the index tracking
CDs are complex and
yes,
have some dangers.
Of course, there's always the possibility they could lose track of the index that
yes,
they're tracking.
That's true, because it's not. This is another strange feature here. They're not actually invested in the index. They're invested in a derivative of the index. That
oh.
is, it's just an option on. It's like a numbers pool.
Oh, derivative.
At Vegas.
That sounds like
let's
fun.
Let's take our money that we really need to be safe and invest it Vegas style because somebody says that they're going to give us our money back at the end of it.
Right. Got it.
Right.
And we have a caller on 1-866-597-1400. And caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. It's Chris from Georgetown.
Hello.
Hi.
Chris von Georgetown.
Derivatives is just a word I don't want to invest in. It just doesn't even sound like a good word to invest.
It isn't? No. Okay.
You don't want to invest in... Okay.
So
okay.
I was going to ask you guys ask you a question about the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and long-term to short-term effects on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
An example would be this is the company I work for had, or a small company, had a federal subsidy that helped us with our health insurance and gave us really, really good affordable, basically it costs us a lot less because it's subsidized through the federal government on a state level.
Mm-hmm.
Now Obamacare is getting rid of all that.
They are?
And I'm just wondering, yes.
In his case, yeah.
Oh, well, we missed something there.
Well, I didn't miss it. No, you asked long-term, short-term effects on the economy, and the big variable that needs to be put in there is where, because in Washington, D.C., the economy is going to be booming over this.
But it's the federal government, it's federal property, and it's booming over because I'm trying to figure out on the long term how does it affect us, and the short term how does it affect us.
Well,
okay.
There's one other question. From my perspective, I don't understand how a giant, massive bureaucracy that the government creates is in any way good. I don't understand how that helps with the economy or helps us when you create another bureaucracy like Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid, or the Pentagon. To me, I don't see how it helps at all.
Well, in this particular case, they're taking an existing bureaucracy to run it. They're taking the IRS.
This is a separate question.
Okay.
But here's another. The IRS, really. I mean, the IRS running healthcare.
I think they should have put the NSA in charge.
Yeah, they should. Yeah, they should have put the NSA in charge.
It can't even keep up with itself. It doesn't make any sense to me. Is why that is going to help us with our healthcare or with the economy. It doesn't even make sense in my mind as to why that's going to help us at all.
Well, like I said, I think we should use the NSA for it because they obviously have enough free time to come up with extra duties that they didn't have before.
Right.
So we should just put them in charge of healthcare.
Well, the issue is that if... And I know I'm going to be a little bit arcane here, but...
what else is new?
The Supreme Court ruled that what we refer to today as Obamacare is constitutional because it is a tax.
I'm not even arguing that. I'm not arguing
and
that it
we
is.
Have, Obama, but we have, no, we have an organization in the United States that Congress has delegated its tax collection authority to, and it's called the Internal Revenue Service. And so you really don't have a lot of choice in that matter. For example,
I'm not arguing choice.
They're not in charge. They're not in charge of health care. They're in charge of collecting the money. It's that simple.
Yeah, it's a tax that's being collected. That's what the IRS does. That's what the Supreme Court said that was going on here. So it wasn't that you're arguing one way or the other. When we come back to the issue, the core fundamental issue here is the government supposed to be doing this? It sounds like both of your questions were coming from the same perspective. Is the government the best people to be doing this, and how is it going to impact our economy? And when it comes back to, again, we don't know. This is a great experiment. We can put up a lot of theories. We can say that we're already spending a lot on healthcare, and is this going to make it worse or better? There's places in the United States that healthcare costs are going to go down. There's also places in the United States where healthcare costs are going to more than double as far as insurance premiums, not the actual cost of the healthcare. That's what this is one of the issues on the law. We're not talking about the cost of healthcare with this law. We're talking about the cost of insurance with this law. And the cost of insurance in some places has gone way up or is predicted to go way up, and in other places is predicted to go way down. It just depends on what kind of subsidies were already there.
Well, you know, Chris, I'm going to answer your question from a different perspective, and I know this makes me very unpopular when I do this. Even when I comment on a Wall Street Journal article in the Wall Street Journal, people direct me to opinion pages. Rather than trying to render an opinion on this myself, and I'm not smart enough to render an opinion on this, legitimately, there are two sources that I'll go to produce something. One, the Office of Management and Budget was created by Congress when it was controlled by Republicans to be a bipartisan accounting device. It was actually created by the Gingrich House of Representatives as part of the Balanced Budget Act. And in the Balanced Budget Act, the anytime a bill is passed by Congress, or is going to be passed by Congress, rather, it has the Office of Management and Budget has to say this bill is either going to be revenue positive or revenue negative. And under the Balanced Budget Act, if it's revenue negative, in other words, if it then either something else has to be cut, or a tax has to be added before the bill can become law. The Office of Management and Budget, at the specific request, they hurried it up, but they've now reaffirmed it, at the specific request of the Republicans in the House, did a careful accounting of the Affordable Health Care Act, and they came to the conclusion that it would dramatically lower the deficit over the next 10 to 20 years, and without it, Medicare will go bankrupt in about 8 years. So,
Medicare will go bankrupt in about 25 years.
Now, actually, right now they're saying that because of Obamacare, Medicare won't go bankrupt. They've revised that this year. At least that's my understanding, having read the articles. Anyway, but the point is that the second piece of evidence, that first one was a sort of expert opinion by the Office of Management Budget. You're certainly welcome to go to their website and look for it. If you go to their website and search for Obamacare, or actually it's Affordable Health Care Act, you'll see the report they wrote up. But the other thing is, and this is probably more significant to me, the act was passed and went and began to go into effect in 2009. In 2014, it's supposed to mostly be in effect. For 40 years prior to 2009, health care cost per patient in the United States rose astronomically faster. I mean, at an amazingly high rate of speed, much, much faster than any other nation on the planet, and much, much faster than inflation. In 2009, it didn't increase as much as it did in the past, and each year since, up until the end of 2010, the increase slowed down. In 2011, it matched inflation, and in 2012, healthcare costs per patients were flat for the first time in 45 years. All I got to say is that was a stated purpose of the bill. It followed immediately upon passing the bill that the slowdown in the rise in healthcare costs that were threatening to bankrupt our nation began to occur, and it did occur. Could be pure coincidence. In fact, because I am very, very familiar with and have some people I'm very close to who work in the medical care industry, it's pretty clear that they have been incentivized under that bill to reduce healthcare costs without necessarily hurting people. So that's the only two pieces of evidence that I really have that's solid. The Office of Management and Budget, which is a Republican created and generally is very friendly towards the Republican viewpoint, relatively speaking, says it's going to lower the deficit and save us money and improve the economy over a long period of time. And
I'm looking at the report now.
Okay.
And what you're saying is correct. If, and this is the big if, the exchanges for insurance are regulated by the state at the state level for all 50 states. It says it right there. And that's not the case. About half the states are saying that they're going to have the federal government doing it, which means that there's going to be more costs involved.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
There's going to be more costs than we know what to predict. That's what I'm not saying that there's more or less than what was predicted already. What I'm saying is that there are costs that we don't know about that are out there, and it could be cheaper if the federal government does it, but they're going to have to do it separately in each state because the state laws trump the federal laws when it comes to what insurance is offered in the state, and it gets to be complex. This is why, Chris, again, both of us have said we don't know. We can say in specific areas with some degree of authority, like for instance, Texas is likely to have its health insurance rates go up.
Yeah.
We're not going to have a state subsidy because we refused it. And a number of other states have as well.
And Chris, by the way, I think that's the source of your insurance costs going up. I don't know in your particular case, but I do know that when the governor turned down the federal subsidies that had previously been there for health insurance for small businesses,
yeah,
the federal government said, we will be glad to give you and continue to give you the money.
Pardon me? You have to do all the stuff the federal government gets to do, regulated a lot more. And this, again, this is not...
No, the federal government's going to regulate it either way.
Okay, so this is where my thinking comes in, is that, okay, you have something that the government's created that it actually doesn't know anything of what it's going to do. It doesn't really know if it's going to raise costs. It's hoped that it will, that it wants... And it's going to create a giant bureaucracy that doesn't do anything. It's like saying, well, it's going to help save Medicare and Medicaid from going bankrupt. Well, would you invest... I mean, it's kind of like saying, well, let's invest in a sinking ship that we know nothing about that's, you know, planned to go bankrupt in 15 years, but this will make it not go bankrupt in 25 years.
Well,
Social Security says, like, well, you know, let's help it from going bankrupt in a less of a time versus in a longer term. Let's make it,
Chris,
not go bankrupt as fast.
Chris, if you were to invest in that ship based on the fact that you have a very near certainty that there's going to be a flood that's going to flood everything, and that's the only ship, I think I'd invest in it.
Well, this is the issue, and it's fairly important we miss this. What was working before was temporary. What we had before is and I'm going to let you refer to some existing stuff out there. You can do the research on this. If there was an existing not-for-profit hospital in the United States, they could not turn people away from the emergency room. That's part of the benefit that they received in taxes, is that if somebody showed up that had an emergency, they had to treat them. Now, a for-profit hospital would turn them to another not-for-profit hospital.
But only if there was one nearby.
But only if there's one nearby.
And
then if not, they had to treat them, which meant that even the charitable hospitals, the not-for-profit hospitals, have to make up that cost somewhere, because you don't have lots of people lining up to give hospitals money just out of their pockets without health care involved. There's some people. There is philanthropy out there. But most of the money that comes to hospitals comes from health costs, people paying it. So hospitals were raising the cost on people that could pay. And
because
in areas
people weren't paying for it, right? People would come in there and not
correct.
Pay for their health care.
Correct. So this was the existing broken system. And a few years back, I guess it was probably 6 or 7 years back, one of the hospital administrators for a hospital in Bell County, a large hospital in Bell County.
I wonder which one is the large
hospital. Yes. And the head of pre-emergency care had a speech given, and comparing costs in different locations in Texas. He was comparing the costs in Travis County, what people are charged for an ambulance ride, versus the cost in Bell County when people are charged for an ambulance ride. And the cost in Travis County, the bill that you get in Travis County in Austin, Texas, was 3 times as much as the bill you got in Bell County for the same time, the same amount of driving distance, the same qualifications on the people on board. And the reason was because in Bell County, the vast, vast majority of people had insurance. And in Travis County, the vast majority of people do not have insurance. So we had a broken system. How do we keep doing a good job with healthcare, if you can even call it a good job, when there was already regulations involved? There were already federal and state regulations that mandated certain things in the hospitals. I am certainly not saying that the Affordable Care Act was the right way of going, but I'm still not going to say it was the wrong way. We had a system that was absolutely broken. The status quo did not work. What we have to replace it, we don't even know if it will work yet, but there are aspects of it that I will, without any equivocation, say are better than what it replaced. There are other aspects that I think are worse.
Chris, my approach to this right now, and I've said this to a lot of people who are pretty strongly right-wing Republicans, is very simple. Somebody come up with an alternative. You know, the cry in the House of Representatives from the right was repeal and replace. And so I've asked and searched diligently to find out what it is they intend to replace it with.
I know what they would tend to replace it with. There isn't a bill for it, but...
What is it?
A big chunk of the Affordable Care Act was written by Republicans under Ronald Reagan.
So they're going to replace Ronald Reagan?
No, they're going to replace it with the part that they liked from before, which means that maybe 80% of the bill won't change, and they're going to take the 20% out that they don't like and put in another 20% that the Democrats won't like.
Oh!
This is politics as usual.
Yeah, but they haven't actually come up with that.
No, they don't have a specific plan.
I hope y'all don't think that because the Republicans put something in that I think it's okay versus the Democrats. Mm. They don't.
No, I'm not saying anything.
That's like, with Bush, and the No Child Left Behind education thing is horrible. I mean, no way in favor because a Republican passes something.
I agree.
Okay.
We should leave children behind. This is a horrible.
No, it's just the federal government trying to run education. It's a joke.
Actually, the difference, Chris, the principal difference between Democrats and Republicans that I've noticed so far is Republicans do a heck of a lot better job of titling their bills.
Yes. So No Child Left Behind. How do you argue with that?
And like the Patriot Act. What do you? If you're against it, by the way, then you're clearly not a patriot. And whereas when the Democrats come up with the bill, it's the what is it? The Affordable Health Care and da-da-da-da-da. I can't even remember the name of the darn bill.
The Republicans came up with the name Obamacare, and the Democrats go, oh, yeah, we like that better anyway.
Yeah, so the big thing, for instance, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the largest unfunded medical subsidy in the United States, terms of dollars, by far, do you know what it is?
Medicare?
No.
The
Affordable Drug Care Act.
Yeah, the prescription health care benefit.
But it's called the Affordable Drug...
It's funny that you bring this up, because I argued this about with Lynn Woolley on the show.
Yeah.
And he was saying, well, he thought that was okay.
Well, of course it was okay. It was passed by Republicans.
Okay, it helped his grandmother get the affordable drug.
Got it, yeah. Yeah.
He said, then you can't argue Obamacare.
Well, the point is...
You cannot tell me Obamacare is bad if you're going to argue that.
The right. point is that...
Exactly, and I totally agree with that.
The difference is Obamacare raised taxes to fund itself...
Right, and
whereas the Affordable Prescription Care Act or whatever it was called,
right.
That thing he lowered taxes,
it's unfunded.
He passed what is arguably the most expensive long-term socialist bill in the history of the United States and lowered taxes in the same year.
Because the Republican passes, great.
Yeah, let's come back to the original questions. What are the effects on the economy?
Mm-hmm.
And when we said we don't know, let me give some of the complexity here. We didn't know what the effects of the economy on the economy would be if the existing system had stayed in place.
Make some pretty well-educated guesses.
Because there were broken stuff, and it was getting worse. But we didn't know how quickly it would get worse. With baby boomers retiring, with people, in the recession, we got less people had health insurance. We didn't know what was going to happen with that. We've got it even more complex now. And let me say this clearly, if I can. I don't know how to say this ultra clearly. There are parts of the Affordable Care Act that I think are great. I think they are absolutely amazingly good. And they're the parts that were agreed on by the Democrats and the Republicans, and they've been agreed on for decades, that the concept of a new Affordable Care Act would have in it. The parts that I don't like are the same ones that you were asking questions about. Who regulates it? How do they get those standards in place? How is it that the hospitals are going to follow the rules, or the businesses are going to follow these rules when the rules are not clear yet?
That is a crucial point.
The number of errors that have happened so far in the progression of this law. It's not just a bill anymore, it's the law, and businesses don't know what they're supposed to do. This, in my opinion, it goes back to we have a complex tax and now health insurance bureaucracy that is interfering with business. And at some point, we've got to look and see what is the impact on the economy. I don't know if it's measurable. I know that in the event that we can measure it, if we were able to take taxes and replace it with a simple system, we would save a lot of money in the economy. If we were going to take health care costs, health care, insurance, and replace that with a simple system, that would be better for the economy too.
We gotta wrap this up, Chris.
We got some commercials to play and
we got another telephone call. Okay.
Thanks for the call.
All right, and we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
All right, guys. I call to defend my honor.
Is the Honorable Lynn Woolley, the Secretary of Logic.
The other one. You had a very confused caller a moment ago who made some untrue statements, and then, Jeff, you made a statement that I'm going to contest as well.
Okay.
That I supported the Bush pharmaceutical plan.
I did not suggest you did. The caller did. I knew you.
Well, the call, that's why I said the caller was confused. He sounded like a nice guy who has me mixed up with
with somebody who cares.
Democrat.
Yeah, I believe that there's a Lynn Woolley on MSNBC.
Sure there is.
Right? No, I don't think so.
Here is what George Bush's rationale for this was, that many elderly and senior citizens were not getting adequate medicine, pharmaceuticals, and for that reason, then they had to be hospitalized much more often. And his rationale was that if they got their medicine, they wouldn't have to go to the hospital as much. And that's fine. That may be true. There may be something to that. But on the other hand, it was another unfunded entitlement.
Yeah,
you got it.
My opinion on that.
As hard as anybody else. And I don't like to hear my opinions not correctly identified by somebody on some other show where I can't respond.
All right. Well, you did respond, and that's good.
My opinion is that I spend a lot of money on buying cars, and sometimes I don't get the car that I want. And I think that if the government could step in and buy me a car,
it would save, you wouldn't go to the hospital's office.
Right, yeah, I could think of my, the stress that I go through.
You wouldn't go to the mechanic's office.
I don't think that's a correct analogy either, guys. We're trying to be serious here. The government is not going to buy you a car, but if an elderly person goes to the hospital, nobody else pays.
Correct.
And the taxpayers end up
you
paying
got it.
For it.
And we agree with that. We agree with that.
Taxpayers, insurance payers end up paying for it.
And on the other hand, Jeff's comment that I take issue with is, of course he supported it. It was a Republican president.
Did I support Bush
as hard as I fight Obama. Bush was nothing close to being a conservative.
Oh.
Bush did not use his veto pen on any spending bill one single time in his first administration.
Okay.
And I believe it was in the final 2 years of the second administration before he ever did that.
Now, wait a minute. I'm just curious. Have we ever had a conservative president? In the 20th century.
My favorite president in modern times is Ronald Reagan, and sure, I can sit here and name all the things he did. That
modern times is getting stretched there at this point when we're talking about the 80s.
I happen to like Ronald Reagan, too, by the way.
Yeah, I like Ronald Reagan. I like Ronald Reagan a lot. There have been three candidates in my lifetime who have run as conservatives. Three. George W. Bush ran as a conservative, governed as a moderate. Ronald Reagan ran as a conservative and pretty much governed as a conservative, but it was a very different day, and he had only, I believe, a Republican Senate for one of his two terms.
And the third one would be Bill Clinton.
No, the third one would be Barry Goldwater, who ran as a strong conservative and lost his butt. But
in your heart, you know he's right.
That's correct, but that's an outlier for one reason.
Nixon
was
the outlier.
Administration repositioned him as a whack job with the Daisy Petal commercial. But we all know that nobody was going to defeat a president who had been in office only a short time following an assassination.
Right.
Wasn't going to happen.
But you realize that when you and I talk about this, that you and I are in a very, very tiny minority who even know who the heck Barry Goldwater was.
I disagree, because Goldwater is a name that is recognized even in younger people today.
Really?
Not in high school kids, but in younger people today, whereas Dukakis, no. People don't have a clue who Dukakis is.
I think Goldwater is one of the three giants of modern conservatism, with Reagan being one and the other one being William F. Buckley. I started to do Rick Perry and saying the other one being
scary.
Team. I can't, oops.
No, this Lynn, this is really scary. I happen to have a great deal of respect for William Buckley. I happen to have a great deal of respect for Ronald Reagan, and I have a phenomenal amount of respect for Barry Goldwater. You and I are agreeing on something.
Unfortunately, our sponsors say we must play some commercials.
All right, play some commercials, but you know, when you come to these entitlements and these things where we have these all-sweeping bills that are called comprehensive, they never come to a good end. And I think if I just couldn't help but think as I was driving over to my office listening to your show.
Thank you.
If we could have Romney Care in Massachusetts, then why can't the other 49 states do it and leave the federal government out?
I agree with you.
I agree. And I've said that on many occasions, the blue sky laws in the security world. Basically, the reason why the Securities Exchange Commission can regulate the states across all 50 states is because each state passed a similar act across all the states to say that securities must be traded like this. If insurance law was done exactly like that, then the federal government would not have to have a big bureaucracy overseeing it. The SEC is an enforcement arm, not a bureaucracy in the common sense. It's more like the FBI.
Right. And guys, as much as I agree with you guys on a lot of stuff, and on, as Jeff knows, on some things I don't, I listen to the show every Saturday. You guys do a good job.
Wow, I don't know. I am deeply honored.
I am honored as well. I don't know how logical it is that you would spend your Saturday mornings listening to us, but
I have no lie.
You are the Secretary of Logic, so we'll bow to your knowledge.
All right. See you guys later.
Thanks for calling, Lynn. And as we have noted, it is time to play some commercials and be relentlessly capitalist as we move forward, supporting Town Square Media and KTEM Radio. So we'll be back on the other side after these important funding announcements from Town Square and KTEM. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. I just can't get over how well we say our names together.
Yes, we're very proud. I'm going to wrench my shoulder out of socket as I pat myself on the back for saying my name.
But you're actually very good at wrenching your shoulder out of socket. You actually do better than the average guy. Anyway, and this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we have about 4.5 minutes left in the first hour. 773-1400 is the number to call in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400.
And actually, I've got lots and lots of
stuff,
of headlines. You know, I could just read them. Vital signs, non-manufacturing expansion, new jobless claims at lowest since 2007, inflation-adjusted exports hit record. That's just, you know, you start down this list of good news in the economy.
Well, let me put some things in perspective here.
Okay.
Europe is, the vast majority of Europe is in pain still. They're
and it's in Spain?
The pain in Spain stays mainly in its country, yes.
The vast majority of Europe is still in Spain.
In pain.
The
pain in Spain is definitely there as well.
Of course, now in French, that's bread.
Right. The export deficit, the trade imbalance in Europe has been getting worse, except in Britain. Britain's economy is recovering. Has been, its trade deficit has gone way down. And something of note, head of the National Bank of Britain, who's got a very lovely, lordly title, has been following the Federal Reserve. When the Federal Reserve makes a decision, he does the same thing.
He's the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Right.
I think that's really cool. Lord
Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Ooh,
yes.
Cool.
Yes. And then
when he retires, he becomes a formal lord. Did you know that?
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
And he's the first Lord of the Exchequer.
Anyway,
not be a citizen of England.
That's true as well.
I thought that was really cool. We need to bring in somebody from the outside.
Yeah, he has been following the acts of the Federal Reserve, and acts can be pronounced with an X or a CTS, and keeping rates cut very low, keeping the buying back
bonds.
Problemed bonds.
Well,
bonds
that
are way below
the previous one, because the new one just took over.
Right. Well, it's continuing.
Right.
And the news, I read the BBC every day. Every day I read BBC News. I tell you this so that you don't do it, because I don't read Barron's. We have to keep our news separate so that when we talk to each other, we actually are giving each other new information.
I read The Economist, so.
Right. So, and The Economist is quoted regularly in BBC. But the idea here is that we've done a grand experiment in national economies in this recession.
Right.
And
still waiting for the final.
Right. But very clearly, if we go to cutting back the budget horribly, drastically, at the beginning of a recession, you're going to lead yourself to a depression. It's been fairly well clearly demonstrated.
You mean like Spain did.
Like Spain,
right.
Like France, like Italy, you just go down the list, basically cut back on everything and you're going to go worse. What we're doing now is cutting back on things after we're in recovery. Which seems, while we have slow growth, it seems to actually be working. It's not necessarily pleasant, but we're still having forward momentum. Anyway, we're almost out of time.
I mean, you're saying we have momentum.
Momentum, yes. Give me a momentum. Yes.
Yes, we want momentum, not less momentum. Yes,
yes.
I agree. If you ever, and one of the comments that, just one of those little headlines we have is the European... The Eurozone is not out of the woods yet.
No,
but you
isn't.
Are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We're going to be breaking for Fox News here in less than a minute. We thought we'd tell you that we are an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. We manage portfolios and investments for people. It's what we do for a living. And you can contact us off the air. We have a telephone, 947-1111, or
1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
You can
email
contact
us
at email, yes.
Jake at tpwc.com or Jeff at tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com. That's the Personal Wealth Coach.
And if you have insomnia, you can listen to some of the podcasts on there.
It's not
we'll
just
be back.
A word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.